God will. How about you? Coming from Genesis 12, 1 through 12, actually it's going to go actually down through 20 more so, and may go shorter, may go longer than that, but it'll actually concentrate more on a concept of God's leading instead of Satan's leading. So, being deceived, or our own leading. So the concept here that I want us to focus in on is God's calling us and leading us. And what do we do? So, the story that we're focused in on today is Abram. Many of you know him more commonly as Abraham, and that is before his name was changed from Abram to Abraham. Abram is his name that he had first, which was father of, many nations is Abraham, and blessed father is Abram, I believe. I may be wrong on that. I'm trying to go off my memory, which is pretty messed up right here and now. But that's what we'll go with for now. Let's go here. Now, beginning our story, the story of Abram. The Lord said to Abram, "Get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." So Abram departed, as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Then Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had gathered, and the people whom they had acquired in Haran, and they departed to go to the land of Canaan. So they came to the land of Canaan. Abram passed through the land of the place of Shechem, as far as the terebinth tree of Moreh, and the Canaanites were then in the land. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your descendants I will give this land." And there he built an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. And he moved from there to the mountain east of Bethel, and he pitched his tent with Bethel on the west of Ai, and Ai on the east, with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. There he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. So Abram journeyed, going on still toward the south. Okay, that's up to verse 9. Let's go over a couple things here. This is about a 500-mile journey by foot that they take. First, he's down in Ur, or up in Ur, to 500 miles down to Canaan. If you have a map in your Bible, you can look and see exactly what's going on here. There's a trip that he's taken that goes up and down. Basically follows the Euphrates River up and then down the fertile valley into the land that would be Canaan, the promised land. So, Ur is basically Persia, which would be Babylon, or which would be Iraq, which would be right now where everybody is fighting over in the Middle East right now, is where he was called out of. That's where his family had lived for years and years and years. He's called out of there, and it's not a straight shot across because they would never make it alive to go across the desert. They need to have water, they need to have supplies and everything, so they have to follow the Euphrates up and then go down through the fertile valley along the coastal valley region of the Canaan area. So they go up and then they go down. It's about a 500-mile journey by foot. They take that journey, and rainfall patterns in this era would have made this journey easier that way. Abram lived as a nomad, and they had tents, and this was something that was not new to them. They ended up in Ur by way of his father ending up there as a nomad. So, what are the promises that God made to Abram, first thing? Here's this guy in Ur, Persia, a region that is filled with idolatry, a region that is not home base for Israelites, is not necessarily where it was known that basically God was living and breathing or whatever. And all of a sudden somebody is picked, handpicked by God and spoken to. Notice it is Abraham. Abraham, who is seen by three major world religions, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, as a father of the faith, the main father of the faith. So he's picked out, God speaks to him in the middle of all this idolatry around him, all this idol worship and everything. God speaks to him and says, I want you to leave. I want you to leave and go to where I'm going to tell you. But in doing this, I want to tell you what I'm going to do with you and for you. I will make you a great nation. What do you mean by that? I'm going to make you a great nation. I'm going to make you more than you could ever imagine. You are going to have such an impact on the world with your little insignificant life. What you may see it as is going to become such a significant part of world history that you can never imagine, all because you're going to just listen to what I say and tell you to do because of your simple obedience to me. You're going to have such an impact, profound impact on the world, that you're going to become a great nation. You're going to have so many descendants that your people are going to become numerous. I will bless you. You are going to become known as a great person by not just one, not just two, but three major world religions. And a lot of other people are going to see you as a great person of history. You're going to become blessed, worldly wise, spiritually blessed, because of the many things that he does in Abraham's life that we read in the rest of Genesis. You can see the many ways that he's blessed. He is given a son, not once, but twice, late in years. Next, make your name great. Father Abraham, father of many nations. You can sing the song if you want. Had many sons. Make you a blessing. He will be a blessing to others. He will become a blessing to others. Notice this is not just a list that I made up, but a listing of verses 1 through 3. Bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you. I'm going to be your protector. I'm going to be your protector and guide, and I'm going to be the one who's going to stand up for you when you stand up for me. You don't have to worry about getting any revenge on anybody who comes against you, because that's not what it's about. That's not how it is. I get revenge on those who stand up against me and those who stand up against those who stand up for me. All the people of the earth will be blessed through you. You will be the start of the seed 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 that will bring the Messiah into the world. Your son, his son, and his son, and his son will soon be the father of the father of the father of the father of the one who will bring the seed that will become the Messiah. Through the genealogies of Joseph and the genealogies of Mary, both. Although God the Father will be the Father of Jesus, the genealogies of Mary and Joseph can both be traced back to Abraham. So, these are his promises just for saying, okay, you've called me, I will go, and this is what you get for listening to me. Give your offspring this land, the promised land. He was in the promised land, and he saw it. He lived in it before the Israelites had to come back and retake it. Before all this stuff that's going on in it now for the Israelites is going on and will continue to go on forever. Nothing will ever be the same as it was that one day that he stood in it. And God said, this land will be yours and your offspring will receive it, until the day that Jesus comes back and says, here it is. The promised land, once again, as it was and as it should have been. What Abram was called to do, leave his family, leave his home, leave his life, and leave his religion. There was no Jewish religion at this time. There was nothing established. This God of the universe speaks out to him out of nothing. He didn't know who this was. He just knew that this was someone he needed to listen to. Before this, he was worshiping idols like the rest of the people in Ur, in Babylon, and whatever you want to call it. And the reason he was called to leave his home and to leave his life and to even leave his family is because God didn't want him to bring any of that idol worship with him. He wanted him to go and start fresh, clean slate, him and God. Period. There were some ways Abraham showed his humanity and lack of faith. First, he took Lot and Sarai. He took his family. Lot, the big one. His wife, maybe not such a big deal to God, but Lot, that caused a lot of problems. But God specifically told him to leave his family behind. Period. Leave everybody behind. And we can see in the rest of Genesis where these problems came about because of Lot being with him. But God worked through all those, and still, Abraham became the father of a great nation. All those things God said he would do, he still did through and to Abraham. Made it a little harder, made it a little rougher road, but nothing's impossible and nothing's too hard for God. May have taken a little bit of a rougher road for Abraham, but had faith in his own ability to save him instead of God. That's where we get into verses 10 through 20. When he gets into Egypt, he goes through the promised land down into Egypt, and this is where the Egyptian captivity starts. They didn't necessarily start to live in captivity and slavery, but it turns into that after a number of years. And that's when God rescues them out and pulls them out under Moses' leadership. Abram goes into Egypt and they settle and they become a great nation living in Egypt. And there was a great famine in the land, and Abram went down to Egypt to dwell there. And the famine was severe in the land. And it came to pass, when he was close to entering Egypt, that he said to Sarai, his wife, "Indeed, I know that you are a woman of beautiful countenance. Therefore, it will happen, when the Egyptians see you, that they will say, 'This is his wife,' and they will kill me, but they will let you live. Please say that you are my sister, that it may be well with me for your sake, and that I may live because of you." So it was, when Abram came into Egypt, that the Egyptians saw the woman, that she was very beautiful. The princes of the Pharaoh also saw her and commended her to Pharaoh. And the woman was taken to Pharaoh's house. He treated Abram well for her sake. He had sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male and female servants, male donkeys, female donkeys, and camels. But the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. The Pharaoh called Abram and said, "What is this you have done to me? Why did you not tell me she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister? I might have taken her as my wife. Now, therefore, here is your wife. Take her and go your way." So Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they sent him away, and his wife, and all that he had. Now, actually, Pharaoh probably would have did what Abram said, but he might not have. Probably wouldn't have, because of God's hand of protection. If he wasn't going down there under God's direction and under God's leadership, Abram would have fell exactly under what Abram was saying. But Abram had to remember he was going there under God's leading and God's direction. So he had that going for him. He was looking at it as, here we go, we're going into Egypt. I'm thinking in my own self, in my own direction, in my own leadership, in my own guidance. I'm thinking as a man living in the world. I'm not thinking as a man under God's leadership, under God's direction, with God's protection over me. If God's called me to do something, he's going to make a way for it to happen. No matter who comes against me, it's not going to be a problem. He didn't see that, so he starts devising this plan. And actually, Abram didn't really technically lie about Sarai. Technically, she was his sister, in a way. They were brother and sister, and in that day, it did happen that brothers and sisters sort of married. And so, They were technically brother and sister, because there were so many wives that one husband had that it wasn't hard for a brother and sister with different mothers to actually become married. So, technically, they were brother and sister, but they didn't have the same mom. They had the same dad. So, he gets down there, and then Pharaoh becomes plagued by God and says, "What is this you've done to me? Why is God coming down on me for this? Get out of my house, woman. Go back to your husband. Take all this stuff that I've given you, man. Abram, take all this. I don't want you to even give that back to me, because I'm afraid of what God might do if I make you do that. I've seen what this God can do just making me miserable because of what I've done here." So, well, I'm not ready to go there yet. The whole thing about this chapter is, when we're called by God to go somewhere or to do something, no matter what it is in our life, we can listen like Abram, like most of us do. We listen most of the way. Sometimes we end up putting a little bit of our own conditions into it, like Abram did. Well, I'll take Lot, because, you know, Lot didn't have his grandfather, his Abram's dad anymore, his uncle or whatever, was now the one that was going to take care of him. Because Abram's dad was the one that was taking care of him. So Lot was now really dependent upon Abram for his care. So Abram kind of felt like this was more than just his nephew, it was his son. So when God called him out, he said, "Well, I need to take Lot," even though Lot's old enough to really take care of himself. This was a 75-year-old man, Abram, and several years old man, Lot, who could take care of himself. He could leave him behind. But he didn't. Now, how many of us, when God speaks to us and tells us to do something, end up sitting there and saying, "Yeah, God, but, you know, I want to try to do it under my own terms. I'll do it, but. And when you throw that "but" in, you're saying, "No, I won't do it. I will do what I want to do and try to make it sound as much like what you've said for me to do with my spin on it." And then it loses all of God's blessing. When we do that, when we play around with what God has asked us to do, what God has called us to do, then we fall into the danger of not being under God's protection and God's blessing as we go out and do in life what God is calling us to do. We may sense what God's will for us in life is, but when we try to do it under our own strength, under our own power, and under our own guidance and leadership, then we fall into the pitfalls of Abram. And we end up, yes, in the long run, maybe ending up where God wants us to be, but oh so much better it would have been to be on the road that God had laid out and paved for us. How much smoother the ride would have been. How much greater an experience it could have been than to ride the road that we've paved for ourselves and said, "God, now bless that." When I first started working in the ministry, when I first became a Christian and I started working in the church in Baltimore and youth work, I coming up with all these great ideas. Yeah, let's do this. It's such a great idea, and it's such a wonderful idea. God's got to bless it. You hear the problem with that? Such a great idea, such a wonderful idea, but the problem is it's my idea. I'm going ahead and getting the idea. No thought whatsoever, process in front of it, praying or asking for God's leadership or direction and planning of it, just saying, this is such a great idea. I mean, it looks great, it's wonderful, it's going to be fun and everything. Yeah. But how much time did I spend in prayer and preparation and asking God for leading me in the preparation and planning of it? Instead, I was just saying, well, what's going to be fun? What's going to be good? What's going to be exciting for the kids? What's going to be wonderful? And then saying, well, that's a great idea. God's got to bless that. And it failed miserably every time. And then all of a sudden I changed the mindset. And all of a sudden, God, what do you want to do? There you go. Okay. And things started to turn around. Things started to go good. Things started to have great results. Kids started to turn to Christ. And it was wonderful. Why? Because I stopped putting the cart before the horse and I started putting God in front of us instead of dragging God behind us and saying, come on, God, let's go. Instead, now, it's God, where do you want us to go? Let's go. Wherever you lead me, I will go. And you know what? It's been a wonderful ride. It's been beautiful. Hasn't had it's had its share of down times, yes, but they've been times of growth. And you notice if you look at a valley, look out over a valley, where does all the green, lush grass and all the wonderful fruit grow? Down in those valleys. Sure, those mountaintop experiences are wonderful and there's a great view there. But they're there so you can look down in the valley and see the wonderful, beautiful, lush grass and fruit that God's planting and planting so that when you get down there in the valleys, they're not times of death and despair. They're times of growing and times of maturing. If you see them as death and despair, that's what they're going to be. But if you see them as growth and growing and maturing, God will use them, and that's what He intends to use them for. Every time you go into one of those times down in the valley, don't see it as death and despair. See it as a time of growth, maturing, and growing, and fruitfulness, and that's what they will become.